how you grow up around money, you know, the scarcity mindset, the abundance mindset, the communication style, the verbal communication, the nonverbal communication, the stress around money, so much of how you develop, whether what, how you want to handle money or how you want to do something differently is based on how you grew up with money.
I'm Julie Bullitt. I've been a family therapist for over 30 years.
I'm David Bullitt. I've been a divorce and family lawyer for more than 35 years.
Together, we have been married for more than 37 years.
In our professional practices, the two of us have been witnesses to individuals and families struggling with life's most difficult challenges. In this podcast, we will talk about the conversations we have had,
the conversations we should have had,
and those that every relationship needs to have in order to find success, happiness, and fulfillment.
This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast. Welcome back to Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
We are talking money and marriage, not the song Love and Marriage, money and marriage with the one and only Rachel Cruz. Rachel is a two-time number one national best-selling author, a financial expert, host of The Rachel Cruz Show, and co-host of Smart Money Happy Hour. Since 2010, Rachel has served at Ramsey Solutions, where she teaches people how to avoid debt, budget, and win with money at any stage in life. Rachel has appeared on Good Morning America, Today, Live with Kelly and Ryan, CNN Tonight, Fox and Friends, The Rachel Ray Show, and has been featured in Women's Day, Success, and Real Simple magazines. I think I got it all, but if not, I apologize. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having
me. Yeah, it's so nice to have you. So I would like to start at the beginning, which is, all right, you're in the financial business. Now, we know, and we'll tell our audience that your dad is in the financial business. How did you decide to get started in that direction? A lot of people go different ways than their parents.
For sure. Well, it's interesting. When I go back to even the year I was born, my parents filed bankruptcy in September of that year, and I was born a few months before that in April. So my entire life really was watching my parents figure out how money works. And so really out of that pain is how my dad really started coaching and teaching and counseling people about money, and then started, the Dave Ramsey Show, books, and then it kind of took off. So when you are a kid of an entrepreneur, you are in the mix of it. So I always like to say we were the first shipping department. You know, we grew up putting labels on boxes. We went to events. We worked back book tables. Like, we were in the business with him. Really no other choice, probably because of childcare. What I kept seeing over and over again was the hope that was given, and people verbally and in tears with their, you know, tears in their eyes talking about how much this information has impacted them. And so then I started actually speaking with him when I was in high school. Someone on our team was like, hey, you should get up and talk about growing up as Dave Ramsey's kid. And there's a lot of a lot of parents in the audience. You could probably give some tips. So I started kind of doing that, and I really enjoyed public speaking, which now I know is very odd because it's like, I think the number one fear for most people is public speaking.
As a therapist, I can tell you it is number two. Number one is dying, and number two is
okay,
public speaking.
Okay, good. So the two,
Side by side.
There you go. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
So then fast forward a few years, I went to college, and I remember bumping up against conversations with my own peers, who didn't necessarily know, Dave Ramsey or any of that, but it was just conversations about money that already began with student loans, credit cards, all of that. And I remember thinking, I'm 19, 20 years old at the University of Tennessee, and I don't have every answer by any means, but the way my parents, really showed us how money works was kind of a different approach than a lot of people I knew that were taking it. So when I graduated college, I was like, you know what? I think I want to go talk to high school students and college students. And I kind of saw my dad as the emergency surgeon. And I was like, I could be the preventative medicine. Like, if they could get this information like I did early, they could just, even if you just avoid debt, right? Just even just that, how much you are set up financially. And so I did. So 2010, started doing that, high school assemblies, all the things. And then, I got married. I have three kids now. And so my message has kind of grown with me into this space of helping people of all ages, I guess, with their money. But as you guys know, the work you do, Money and marriage is there's a lot of conflict.
Yeah, we want to talk
area.
With you.
So
we naturally, talk with you about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll naturally, you know, my content naturally leans into that direction sometimes too, because the relational side of money is as affects people as much as the tactical side.
Yeah, we dedicated like a whole section of our first book to conflict that folks have about money. So let's. What do you see most often when you're working with a couple and work, whether it's financial planning, whether it's dealing with debt, what are the most common conflicts that you see working with a couple?
I would kind of group them in a couple of buckets. One that we see is just they don't know how to interact with their couple with their spouse because they're so opposite when it comes to money. Like it's a pretty classic like spender saver. We kind of coined it nerd who loves the numbers, loves doing the budget, the free spirit who's like, oh my gosh, you're stressing me out. And so just how do we merge? What does this look like in a marriage when we view money so differently? So that's kind of one bucket. Honestly, the more I dig into, which this is more in your lane, you could probably teach me some things, but how you grow up around money, you know, the scarcity mindset, the abundance mindset, the communication style, the verbal communication, the nonverbal communication, the stress around money, so much of how you develop, how you want to handle money or how you want to do something differently is based on how you grew up with money. So like I see that as a bucket. And then a big one too is couples that are getting married later, which we're seeing more and more, merging their finances. Yeah. So this is like the number one hate I get on this topic is because we are pro becoming one, you know, looking at your household money and saying, hey, overall, how do we win with money as a household, regardless of who brings it in, how much you're bringing in, but together, how do we work on this and combine our money? Which ultimately, really, you're combining your goals and your dreams and your fears and that. And people hate that. They want separate checking accounts. They want their own identity with money. They don't want to work closely with their spouse. They want to do their own thing still. So we see and run into that a lot as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that sort of was popping up for me as you were talking is that there's, you know, it's obviously, you know, difficult for a lot of couples to talk about money and also people to talk about money and the shame aspect of money, right? Like not having enough or people thinking, you know, that if you say no to something, that there's something wrong with you or feeling less than. And I would imagine that that's a lot of what you see. We've seen that in couples sort of like, you know, the making, you know, making it look okay kind of situation. Yeah. And then the shame that sort of takes toll on the people.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Guilt and shame are big emotions around money. And I think what's so hard is uncoupling this idea that money is not your identity. You know, I always tell people your net worth is not your self-worth, but we right. live in a world, we live in a culture that's the applause you get when you make a high income, when you look successful, you know, all of that is what people chase.
Yes.
And not that necessarily having goals, you know, and saving a certain amount, whatever, you know, like those are not bad things, but when that is so coupled with your self-worth and who you are, it goes down a dark path really, really quickly. And so trying to separate those out to say that is not who you are. And what's hard about money is the mistakes you've made in the past, they really do follow you from even a logistics standpoint, right? Like when you're trying to get out of debt, you're like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe we racked up $18,000 of credit card debt because we weren't paying attention. Now we're having to face that every day to get out of it, right? There's a kind of a constant reminder because the numbers, they don't lie. They're just right there. And so again, helping people, I think with the hope of not only their identity and their worth and who they are is not tied to their salary. It's not tied to their lifestyle. But yet it's hard. That's an uphill battle because, again, that's the applause you get in our world.
I mean, you talked about the two types of couples, you know, the spender and the saver. Unfortunately, you're talking to two who were spenders. And I'll tell you a quick funny story. Julie wants to talk to you about a couple of other things related to this. But I don't know if you remember the book, The Secret, right? The secret,
you know,
and if you believe it, it will happen. The universe will turn you. Just say it enough, believe it enough. So we spent a lot of money, and we believed it was going to go away. The problem was that the debtors didn't really believe
didn't
in the secret.
They weren't
buying the secret.
Yeah.
So we got in a little bit of trouble when it came to early in our marriage, when we're raising our kids and so forth, you know, you get a leather jacket, you do this, you do that.
Well, we also had moved into a really nice neighborhood, yeah. and there was a lot of Joneses there
yeah.
that we tried to totally. Keep up with. And we were doing okay because, you know, David's a divorce lawyer and I'm a therapist, so we have a good income. But it just got a hold of us, and we didn't kind of take note of what was happening. And that's where your dad came into our lives with I started to just kind of investigate, like, you know, oh, we're not going to be able to stay in this situation that we're in. And I went and went to the library. I didn't buy it. I went and got the book, The Debt
oh,
Diet.
Yes.
And I literally
for the total money makeover.
Total money makeover. Was it that one? And I yes. made copies of the snowball thing. And I did it all. And I sat down with David and I said, we have got to sit down and we've got to be honest here. And we went and gathered all of our debts, like every little credit card, every student loan, and we sat down, we wrote it all down. I think we were probably crying at that point because we had never really like looked at everything yeah. together. Like, and it was mm-hmm. awful, but it was the best thing that we ever did. And we started the debt diet. And one of the things that we did was we made it very public. We told our friends, we told our neighbors, and we just kind of put it out there like, hey, we're in a situation and this is what we're doing. And some of our friends and neighbors were like, uh-huh, that's going to last like a minute, you know, doing coupons and, you know, whatever, and not going out at night. And we cut the country club. We stopped, you know, spending at Nordstrom's. My kids were wondering, like, why can't we buy stuff anymore? But we did it.
We took the one penny vacation to some place in Florida where you had to go on a tour. But so let's take that.
So we
for
got
a second.
Ourselves out of the debt.
Let's take yeah. that for
well
a second.
Well done, and, y'all. That's amazing. Yeah,
It really was. We worked really hard. We're fortunate that we can, if we work hard and we're both workers, that we could turn it around. But so I want to shift this back to you as the advisor. Okay. So a couple comes to you early in their marriage. Both of them come with debt. Maybe they have, you know, reasonable incomes in today's day and age, and they are looking for a plan. How do we get ahead so that we're at a certain place where we want to be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years from now? How do you work with that, with those two people?
For sure. Well, I think, you know, if they have a common goal of both being on the same page, like, that's number one for sure. And there's so many couples that we talk to, and they do their debt-free screen. They give us like their story. And usually one couple, you know, it's kind of like what you guys said. One of them was like kind of leading the charge and the other one comes. But we find the most success happens when both are involved, because you're kind of shaking hands at that point and saying, this is going to become our life and we're doing this together. And what's wild is that we hear constantly like, our marriage is better.
Yeah.
And we're always like, we don't have a marriage class, you know, but to your point, earlier in this podcast about how intimate and how vulnerable the subject of money is. And when you can see your spouse in that and you both cheer it on, like, it's incredible. So that's number one. If you can both work together, like, that's really the first big hurdle. And then number two, it's really tactical, but you mentioned it, the debt snowball. And so what you have to look at is you list out all of your debts, everything but your house, from smallest to largest, regardless of the interest rates. You're going to pay minimum payments on all of your debts. So you're not going to get behind on anything. So stay current, but you're going to attack the smallest one first. And then once that's paid off, you're going to take all the payments you're paying on that, roll it over to the second smallest.
Why the smallest
and what happens
one first?
Because it's behavior change. So a lot of people
It's traction.
Yeah, mathematically, yeah. people yeah. want to do the highest yeah. interest rate. Like, well, mathematically, which we always laugh, like, well, if we were doing math, we wouldn't be in credit card debt in the first place, right?
Right.
So, but the behavior change is so big in the personal finance. It's much like the health space mm-hmm. For your health. Like, if you're trying to lose weight and you end up gaining weight, or it's going to take you forever to lose 1 pound, like, over time, it's defeating. And so when you can get quick wins, we find people stay in it longer. So
I 100%
the debt snowball
agree
method,
with that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's the behavior that's so big. Yeah. And so when you can feel progress, that's huge.
Yeah, when you cross so, one line off of your, you know, debts, it
yes.
just feels so good. It's like making your bed in the morning.
That's right. Yeah. And what it does, it inserts hope. And
yes.
money can be so hopeless where you feel like, mm-hmm. I can't do this. But when you actually get a win, you're like, oh, I can. But in that, people need to do exactly your story. I mean, honestly, you cut expenses.
Yep.
So you're
yes.
not going out to eat. You're not going on vacation. You're doing nothing. All that money, which is wild that you see how much money you've been spending here and there. And when you pile it all together through the month, people people find hundreds, if not thousands of dollars from just cutting expenses. And so you shop at a different grocery store. You know, you do, I mean, everything. Your life should change. And then if you can up income, that's helpful too, right? Those both sides of those equations. So we always say live like no one else because no one's doing this. No one sacrifices. They just want to feel good in the moment. Mm-hmm. And if debt's the avenue to feel good, they're going to walk down that. So be different. Live like no one else. So later you can live and give like no one else.
You mentioned, I think it was in, I don't know if it was during an interview somewhere. I mean, I've done a lot of watching of your stuff over the last week or so, but I caught one thing that caught me, which I really liked, which is budget with budget comes freedom. And most people don't look at it that way. So tell us,
that's right.
Where does that come from? What do you mean?
Yes. So we teach people a zero-based budget, which just simply means your income for the month minus all of your expenses, which should include giving and saving, should equal zero. So every dollar has aim. So you have a plan for your income before the month begins. You know where your income is going to go, what you're going to spend in every category of your life. And a lot of people, which including me, because I'm more of a spender, I'm on your team. I'm more of a natural spender. I'm more of a free spirit. Like details, you know, aren't great for me always. It always could feel, and especially people wired like me, it feels constrictive. It feels like, oh my gosh, that feels like no fun. Honestly, like I'm probably gonna have to say no at times. It doesn't feel good. But as a spender, once I started really living in this, especially with my husband and our marriage, I started to realize, oh, I can spend with mental freedom. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not thinking twice, like, oh, is that too much? Is that a little irresponsible? Or God, we're going to have enough to go out to eat because we have this birthday thing coming. Like all the questions are answered. Mm-hmm. And so when you're spending, you're actually spending with freedom. And for a lot of people, because so many people are in that paycheck to paycheck cycle where there really is no margin, you're not second guessing the big stuff in life, groceries, the light bill, the mortgage. Like you're not thinking, are these things going to get paid if I get this over here? It's answered for you in the budget. So there's such mental freedom when you are proactive with your income versus letting your money just happen to you.
Yeah. And I think what, you know, we talk about this with couples is intentionality. And I think that's what you're talking about, right? Like not just going through and hoping that it happens or works out, but intentionally saying, this is money that we're spending on. And I remember when we were doing, you know, the debt diet and getting down to, you know, a good area, I started being afraid of spending money, which actually was great because it was such a different place than I had been before.
You're not so much afraid these days.
Yeah, I've sort of balanced it out. But one of the things that David and I do is we really keep on top of where we are. And we say to each other all the time, you know what? Time to pull back. We just said it this week. He said, you know what?
Well, yeah. There's a couple of hot button places in Nashville where I tend to spend some money and I've been there twice in the last 2 months.
We're on a pullback right now. We're on buy what you need only and no extras. So, and
that's right. Well,
let me ask you this. You mentioned your husband. Now you met your husband at University of Tennessee. I read Winston, right?
Yes, okay. That's right.
So Winston and you get married and all of a sudden he's married to Dave Ramsey's daughter, the grand poobah of financial advice. Tell us how that all worked out, how the dynamic was, and was there any conflict the two of you had in terms of what you do and what the two of you wanted to do?
You know, it's funny. He always tells the story that when he first asked me out, we started, going on some dates, some of his roommates were like, dude, that's Dave Ramsey's daughter. And he was like,
who the hell's that?
Who's Dave Ramsey? You know, my dad's Buddy Cruz. Like who? He wasn't very familiar with my dad, which actually is a gift. I kind of, I appreciated that. And he paid for a lot of our dates on his Capital One credit card, which made me laugh too. Cause I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like, I haven't seen a credit card ever, but what's funny is Winston, honestly, from how he's naturally wired, he's a natural natural saver. He's a natural, he works. He loves to work. So like this idea of making money, he's always kind of known. He's cut yards since he was like 13 years old. Like, I mean, he's just always had this up to make money, to save money and to be smart about it. And so he has more of a scarcity mindset. So when he married me, I honestly, as we got into the dynamics of marriage and money, I kind of realized, I was like, oh God, kind of thank God for Winston. Because if it weren't for him, then if I married a spender, I'm like, I probably would be broke. Because I'm probably not great at that.
We came close.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, honestly. And so, but then I laughed because I'm like, if he didn't have me, he would have no fun because I bring all the fun and all the experiences, it balances it out.
It does.
And so, yeah. So we've, I'd say for the most part, for sure, we have, disagreements or like, gosh, I feel like you're doing this over here. You're spending too much. There's a lot of you know, a lot of conversations with the kids now. Mm-hmm. Like our most recent one was, because I teach, you know, I talk about this, which is so funny. I'm the one that talks about money for my job. But, you know, more is caught than taught with our kids. Like they're watching. And so he even raised a red flag the other day. He's like, they have all these Amazon packages that just keep arriving. And letting our kids open it, they're getting this like dopamine, even though it's not for them. They're like, it's still this like, this thing that we have set up in our environment of our home that like, they, we don't need the Amazon guy at our house every day. Like, what is that instilling in our kids? Even though it's in the budget, right? It checks all the responsibility, quote unquote, marks. But yet we're having this discussion with our, you know, thinking through how do we parent this well? Because how we both grew up, Winston and I, we both grew up with parents that, I mean, they grinded it out. You know, we shopped at consignment sales. I mean, my parents were coming out of bankruptcy, mm-hmm. right, when I was born. And so we grew up seeing the hustle, feeling the sacrifice. Like, we saw that where my kids, we almost have to manufacture some struggle yeah. And be that much more intentional with them. So those are our conversations today that we are, you know, we're circling. And of course, I always want to stay probably at a little bit of a nicer hotel than he probably would. And you know, it's all those things if we're traveling. Yeah. But yeah, overall, I have learned through lots. Thank you for your work, because great marriage therapists have saved us so many times. Like they've been blessings in our lives. You know, we work through our own marriage stuff, but overall with money, learning to see the strengths that he brings to the table that are not my natural strengths, and actually seeing them as gifts mm-hmm. for me mm-hmm. and what I lack. And then same with him. And so when you kind of can honor that and empathize where the other person is coming from, it does. It just humanizes the problem. And so that's what we always talk about in our marriage.
I think you mentioned the Amazon packages coming every day. I make jokes around here. If Julie may be gone for a few days, but the packages are, you know, and I stack them up in the kitchen, take a picture and send it to all my kids. But you know, I think in terms of generationally, right, you think about 100%, what are your children seeing? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to wait till Christmas or your birthday because you're getting packages at the house. It might just be toilet paper, but tearing it open is, that happens every day.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the environment that we're living in, which it seems to me is going to make your job even harder mm-hmm. as the next generation of people starts moving into adulthood and trying to learn about what to do with money, because all they do now is open the door and the packages are there.
That's right. Yeah. There's not a lot of friction between purchasing today. I mean, you can press your iPhone, you know, your Apple Pay, right? And it's all done. You don't have to put in your card number. So there is this total rewiring of a set of behaviors that you really have to implement. And almost, you know, you have to get to this point with your money. And we get this a lot on the Ramsey show. It's a caller driven show. So we have people call in with their situations, and you can almost, it's wild. You can just hear, you don't even have to see their faces. You can hear the tone, and you hear the people that are desperate
yeah.
because they've hit this place mm-hmm. where they think, I can't live like this anymore. I work too hard mm-hmm. to feel broke. Like, what am I doing? And so we call it the I've had it moment. You know, yep. you wake up one day and it's like, I've had it.
Yeah,
I've had it.
Yeah.
And so those people, yeah. they'll do the work.
Yep.
They'll make the sacrifice. You know, they will delay that gratification. They'll find ways to rein in the spending and to change their behaviors, you know, but it is the people that are like, it's kind of lukewarm. It's like, I probably could be doing better, but I'm not like struggling. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's not that bad.
Yeah.
And that's hard. That's a hard, hard thing to throw out for people to grab onto.
We talked to a financial planner about 2 years or so ago on this show. And he had a great piece of advice when it came to, you know, ordering on the internet. He said, don't put Amazon on your phone. And don't have your phone with you while you're watching TV or while you're sitting on the couch. Because if you don't feel like getting up to go to your computer to order it, you probably don't need it. And I thought that was really, I think, good advice, although I don't know how much people follow it. But
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah. And I wanted to just circle back around. I think, you know, what David and I went through, which was really, you know, difficult and challenging, I wouldn't trade it for the world, because I think it helped our relationship, you know, just in terms of being a team and also doing hard things. I mean, if I look back in our life, we had infertility issues. I say that was really a hard piece. I would say the financial piece was hard. We have a kid that has, you know, drug and alcohol and mental health issues. I would say that's hard. Mm-hmm. But I sort of couple all of those things together and think about them. But that's also what makes us a great couple.
Yes. Absolutely. And I'd want your, tell me if this is right, because you guys are the professionals here. But what we tell couples is that what's hard for me when I hear that they're living separate lives financially, because like, well, we don't want to fight. We don't want conflict. And I'm like, But the thing you're avoiding is the exact subject you actually need to be digging into. Like when you lift the rug after you've been sweeping under, like, and again, my husband and I have done this in other areas of life, not necessarily money, but you look at all the crap in the middle, and actually that's where intimacy is born. When you actually push through the stuff that you want to avoid and the conflicts, and you actually do the work to tackle the subject you're trying to avoid. To me, I'm like, that's what's created intimacy in my marriage.
You're a million percent right. I mean, you said something, and I don't like to call us an expert or anything, but you said something that I think is what caught you. I don't remember, but there you made mention the healthier you are, the healthier your marriage is. I think you're in your car on a video, but that is on the money. I mean, physically, emotionally, financially, and otherwise, I think. If there's a takeaway, it seems to me, for couples listening out there, that's kind of a good one, don't you think?
No, absolutely. Working on yourself, understanding, you know, from the money perspective, your money story, understanding what's affected you, what your fears are, what your tendencies are. Like when you can learn to control you, right, and your money habits, you're going to bring such a gift to the table for your marriage. And so there's something about that, is so true. And why it took me so long to understand that from a marriage perspective, because I think that, you know, one of the messages I feel like I heard, you know, not necessarily from like a specific person, but in general is, gosh, when you get married, your spouse is going to be the one that helps fulfill this, or they're going to give you that, you know, it's all this, like, I need the spouse to do this for me. And then you realize, no, like they can give you gifts, but it starts with me. And the more unhealthy I am and the more I'm looking for them to solve my problem, welcome to the marriage therapist sessions.
At least, or my office is the other option.
Yeah. Or yours,
and the divorce lawyer. So one of the things I think I just want to like really, really emphasize, which is what you're saying, and I think we're also saying, which is that if you are struggling with talking about money, with the way money is going in your marriage, your relationship, that is something that you should face head on, because it will actually, in the long run, help your relationship. Because if you can be vulnerable, that's where the intimacy happens. Those hard conversations, those hard decisions of what gets cut from the budget and what you do, that's what brings you together.
Yes, absolutely. And I've hosted the show with Dr. John Deloney, who he does some work in that therapy world, the marriage space. But he always says, when you enter into those conversations, if it's your first time sitting down with your spouse and having this conversation, do not be pointing the finger at them. What is going on inside of you? What are your fears? What are your goals? What do you long for? What's the story that you've made up in your head about what's happening? Like, right? Like it is a level of self-responsibility of, here is what I am, because you can't change your spouse, right? But hopefully the prayer is that the marriage is in a place where you both can connect and empathize and actually have a conversation about it and not stonewall. And that's what's wild too is, you know, we get so many calls about that. And then as you dig in and start asking questions, you realize you don't have a money problem. You have a marriage problem.
Yeah, happening. And I've been doing my work for almost 40 years, and we need to wrap you up so you can get on to your next, whatever you're doing next. But I can't tell you how many times I've had folks come in who don't know anything about their finances. I just don't know, because that's how they separated out. I didn't worry about it. He took care of it, or she took care of it. And then all of a sudden, why do I have this? In the old days, now you don't have a box, but when I started out, people come with boxes of bills, you know, and people just were in the dark, either because they chose to be there, which is most of the time in those situations, or the other spouse just kept them there, and they didn't fight to get back in. And either way, they ended up in my place spending money they shouldn't have had to spend, to find a way to, you know, to break things up. But
yeah, so I would say that too is we push couples that you both have a voice.
Yes.
You both need to be sitting at the table, regardless of husband, wife, working, not working, like it doesn't matter. You both need to be there, because it's unfair to the spouse who's carrying all of this. They're isolated over here dealing with all this stress while you get just to live over here. But then also, if there is a control issue happening, which we get that sometimes where it's like, my spouse won't let me in, right? Then that's the issue you got to deal with. But both need to be at the table.
Yeah.
So that's a great point, because that happens.
Yeah. And so we talk to couples about that all the time. You know, like, even if you're not the one that pays the bills, you need to know what's going on. You need to know where money is. You need to know how to do things. And we kind of take this a step further, and we have four daughters, and one of the things that I said is, you don't have to be good at hair, but if something happens to me, I need to know that you can do our kids' hair. So every once in a while,
I could come to your house and braid your hair anytime you need it done.
So once in a while, I would do the ponytail test, yeah. And I would say, here's a ponytail holder. Show me that you can do whatever kids' hair.
Yep.
Good.
I passed.
I love it.
Still can do it. Now, my granddaughter doesn't believe me. She laughs. You can't do it. No way. You know, that kind of thing. But anyway, Rachel, you've been awesome. And we so appreciate you taking the time to come on our little program, our little, what was it? The little train that could, or what was the name of it?
The little engine. Little engine that could.
That's kind of the way we look at things over here. And folks, we're going to post all the connections, all the links in the show notes. Rachel Cruz, you're awesome. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. And we will keep watching you and keep learning. And we hope all you folks out there do the same. Join us next time on Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
Julie Bullitt is a professionally licensed clinical social worker and family therapist. David Bullitt is a divorce and family lawyer. Julie is not your therapist and David is not your lawyer. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only.